Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, into the 11 o'clock hour, it's Cody and Gold, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip funding guys at kclynn.com. We're 30 minutes away from the Chiefs Red half hour. And during the Chiefs Red half hour, Jeffrey Flanagan, author of Marty Ball, co-wrote that book with Marty Schottenheimer, The Life and Triumph of Marty Schottenheimer, the coach who really did win it all. He's going to join us at 11:30 and spend a great deal of time with the Schottenheimer family throughout the process of writing that book and stayed in touch with them. And he'll have a great perspective on the life of Marty Schottenheimer, who, of course, the news today, unfortunately passing away yesterday at the age of 77 after a long battle with Alzheimer's. It is Cody and Gold, and on Tuesdays we do have the forum for the first part of this hour. And last week we had Rob, we had CDOT, we had Levine. We said, screw those guys. Let's just have Rob in studio this go around. What's up, man?
Not much, guys. I mean, that's how the listeners feel too. But you know, I don't want to say that because then people hear it and it's the whole deal.
Uh-huh.
Rob, yeah. You're similar age to this group, so I assume you remember Marty Schottenheimer like we do. The first coach you remember being the coach of the Chiefs.
Yeah, I was. He was hired in 89. I was born in 91. So he is my childhood coach. And I assume, like everyone else in town, you eventually at one point had an interaction with him. When I was a kid, like I think 4 or 5 years old, my parents took me out to a dinner, and at like table over was Marty Schottenheimer. And of course, 5-year-old Rob was like, it's Marty Schottenheimer. It's so great. Because I'm 5. I don't know any better. And eventually, as the story goes, I'm 5. I don't remember it. My parents tell it. That he could hear us, because like booths back to back or whatever restaurant we were
sure.
at. And he could hear this 5-year old every once in a while being like, hey, did you see Marty's doing this? Did you see? And eventually he leaned over and was like, do you want to just come take a picture of me? And because it was 96, for whatever reason, my mom had one of those, you know,
disposable.
Like,
I was about
it
to say, yeah. Your mom had a camera on her in 96?
I mean, I was 5, so everything. Yeah. 5-year-olds do is cute to parents. That's how you get sure. it. That's how it works. You
totally.
Have a phone in your pocket. Same concept applies. So I have somewhere in my parents' house a photo of me and Marty Schottenheimer like doing a thumbs up. And then afterwards he was like, you want to talk football for like a minute? And I was like, I mean,
what'd you ask?
I don't remember.
Something about 3 technique, probably.
It was probably very deep dive.
Yeah.
Hey, do you like the way Neil sets the edge right now? It was probably something like that. Unlike, hey, do you love Joe Montana too? It probably wasn't something silly like that.
No.
It's funny how many people, though, will have a story similar to yours, though, like that. Meaning, it's not you don't hear that a lot about coaches, especially now in the NFL. I know things
very
have changed with
now.
Social
or
media
players,
and,
yeah.
and players, but he was a man of the people. I'm curious now which restaurant you were at.
The reason
why I ask is because I told Cody this morning off air as well. I had a very similar experience at a restaurant I think still exists, Jalapeno's, a Mexican restaurant
yeah.
in town. And our family used to go there growing up a lot, and Marty Schottenheimer would go there quite a bit. There were multiple occasions where he was over. In the booth or whatever, you know, a little bit further away, and it was always like, oh my god, there's Marty's in the corner there. And you're right, he was always extremely friendly to everybody in the restaurant. So it was a similar experience. And I didn't realize you and I were born in the same year, so
correct,
about the same time.
I think we went to KU at the same time, actually, like legitimately the exact same time. We didn't know each other.
30,000 enrollment yeah. there, so it makes sense,
which is weird because I was such a big deal, Gold. I
yes.
mean, I was huge,
yeah. massive,
big
yeah.
man on
there
campus.
Rob was the J of the shirtless guys in the front row of the student section, probably.
I don't have the shirtless paint body, Gold.
Yeah, well, neither do I. Yeah, neither did I.
You got to have what they're called muscles, and I don't have those.
That's right.
Looking forward to both of your bench presses in the combine.
It's going
to
be great.
Well,
when's the last time you benched?
I mean, when did I leave high school? So 2009.
You're still gonna do better than I.
Last time I benched was last year.
Nobody can do worse than me in the bench press.
He did equally as bad as you. They gave him goose a half egg. Or one, but that was a lie.
What's the number you have to even press? Is it like actually like the combine where it's like 2.5?
No.
I just didn't know. It was like the bar. It was like 145.
It was the bar in like two small ways. What 80 or 100? 100? 120?
I don't know. Yeah, something.
These
like
numbers
that.
Aren't making it look better for you, Gold.
I know.
You should have been like, "Yep, it was 225."
Almost got
three bills. No, almost got that rep up.
I haven't done that since the combine last year. So there's no way. Like suddenly, a year older, I'm not going to perform any better.
You gotta wait till that dad strength comes in. Maybe one day when you're a dad, you get that dad strength.
You think if I just gain weight, period, that'll be easier?
Yes. You have more weight, therefore more weight to put up the bar.
I do weigh more than I did a year ago. You're saying there's a chance.
There you go, man. I have faith in you. I want you to throw your whole body. Kick and scream.
Just a big rest, just to get that one bench.
Is that weight you gained good weight, or is it like I had one too many Bud Lights watching the game?
It's the I need to stop drinking some of this craft beer and switch to hard liquor, and the stomach's starting to get a little beer gut a little
I've gained
bit.
That weight. That's the exact same weight. Yeah, I have this. I also have the, hey, I don't want to cook. I'm going to get a cheeseburger tonight weight. Which I also is not great.
You guys know I don't cook, so it's it's all the time just fast food or Chipotle nonstop. Yeah,
you'll be fine.
You'll be fine, Rob. You're the odds favorite.
I just want you to know, Vegas has said it.
Technically,
Speck set the odds last year, and we haven't gotten them out yet. He set me as the second lowest odds last year.
He screwed. There was a lot of value last year. He had me as the favorite to win a year ago. What a mistake!
It was Bob. I went back and looked.
Was it Bob?
Bob was the favorite. You were the second best odds. I had the second worst odds. Ryan was ahead of me last year.
Offended.
My boy Ryan, who finished last year. I think he finished last.
He did.
Just Ryan, the offense you took that. I know he wasn't just like playing it up. You were legitimately offended being worse than Ryan.
In fairness, Ryan at the time said that I had the best odds. Like if you were going to place a wager,
he
said I was a good long odd bet to win it all, which I did. And now I'm trying to run it back. I hope that it goes better than the Chiefs running back.
You use the term run it back too, because that make me the Bucks because I'm the new guy on the block.
Unfortunately, it's
going to backfire on me.
It's going to have the same outcome. You'll also have to keep an eye on his vertical. There was a big cheating scandal last year with Cody's vertical.
They keep making a big deal about, like, I haven't admitted that there was an issue with the measuring in that system.
How did you cheat? Did you just put your arm up a little bit?
No, so before everybody jumped into the vertical, you had to adjust it. And so they're like, don't hold your hand straight. You know, like, don't extend.
Like he's being robbed.
And so Cody, like,
you got robbed. Did they make you put your hands up?
I did not. I did get robbed, but I was kind of did the hands. I did get robbed in a parking lot.
I didn't know if he said hands up. I was curious if that's how it really works.
I mean, my hand. He did not say that. My hands did go up. There was a gun pointed at me. So the hands did go up. It was just almostly just like disbelief.
It's happened a long time. We can joke about it now.
Yeah, it's been 2 or 3 years.
That's the bar for a long time.
In Houston, when I was in Houston just 2 years
ago.
Maybe
Boise doesn't seem like the place that happened. But Boise feels like it's free reign to
Houston
make fun
after
of.
My show when I was doing late nights. So it was like 1 a.m. after
so
my
you're
show.
In the station parking lot?
No. I was inside the apartment complex. I had parked my car and I was walking towards my actual apartment. And I saw a guy standing kind of in the corner. He was under the light, too. It wasn't like he was trying to hide. And I got a weird vibe, but I'm like, okay, am I being paranoid? So I kept kind of walking. And then he slowly was walking. I'm like, uh-oh, I got it. And so then I'm like, all right, well, let me just cut in a different direction and see if he follows me. And sure enough, as soon as I go right, he like he hops off the curb and just kind
sped
of
up.
Sped up. Points, I mean, again, I don't know if it points a weapon. Sure looked like a gun to me. I'm not a gun guy, so I don't know. I'm not going to test.
I think that's probably safe to
assume. I'm not going to try it out.
Is that a real gun? May I inspect it?
And so that's how it went down. And so then he, you know, he's like, just give me your cash. I don't carry cash on me. Who does? And I ended up thinking, okay, here's my laptop bag. Just take the laptop. I thought I was going to be good. He looks in the bag of the laptop. I think I'm good to go. And he says, get on the ground. And that's when I really freaked out. So I was laying on the pavement, face down. Not knowing what on earth was about to happen. That was bad.
Did he take anything from you or just take off after you were down?
Stole my phone, laptop, did not take my keys or wallet, and then he didn't see that I had an Apple Watch on me, so he didn't take that, thank goodness. So I was able to still make a phone call.
But, yeah, and, I mean, those things, maybe it's just me. I have the Find My iPhone and Find My Mac feature.
Well, I tried that right away. The guy shut it off immediately.
Okay, so he's... Yeah. I don't want to say he's smart. That was
Yeah, meme, I got you.
Quit complimenting the guy who held gold at gunpoint. He had all those angles figured out.
He actually had a really good plan. Good for him. You get what I mean?
It sounds like you were complimenting his plan perfectly. You know, kudos. Yeah. Really.
I mean, really, it's good to have a plan executed perfectly.
Oh, man. But yeah, anyway.
I don't know how you do it in your family, Gold. We joke about traumatic instances in mine.
Oh, we can laugh about now because fortunately, I was not physically harmed. It was a scary moment, no doubt about that. But it worked out.
We laugh about the time a guy punched me in the face in the middle of downtown.
That was just the weirdest thing that I've ever heard happen. That's not even the punch isn't even the funny part. It was the fact that it's just the way it happened. You're just minding your own business.
It doesn't make any sense. I was just walking.
You were like, Rick Moranis. And he was just the other guy that punched Rick Moranis.
He threw his shoulder into me. I was like, oh, it must be like someone I know, like Rob. I look up, stranger, fur coat. What the F is your problem? I'm like, I'm sorry, what? Then a punch in the face. Said, what the F is your problem? I'm like, I'm just going to leave. Like, that's what I said. I'm just going to, like, this doesn't feel like a good situation for any of us.
You're like, right now, the problem is I got punched in the face. If we're going to line up the numbers.
If you're curious, this is my exact issue at the moment.
A minute ago, I had none, but now it's being punched in the face.
Rob, the life and times.
Rob Britton in studio with us. It's the four.
Weirder than yours, because yours was at 1 in the morning. Mine was at 11 a.m.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
Weren't you covering a press conference, too?
Yes, for the KC Buzz.
That's what it was.
I'll never forget them now.
KC Buzz.
They were very shortly lived as a KC Buzz because they got sued for trademark infringement.
Oh.
Because it was literally they colored in the Hornets logo.
And they'd become the Tornadoes, right?
Yeah, and they were the Tornadoes.
Kevin Young played professional basketball in Kansas City.
Sharon Collins was at that. Your boy.
Was he?
From Kansas. He was at that presser.
I don't think he ever played.
He was part of the ownership
game.
Group. There was talk he was going to play.
Was he playing the bowling ball? I don't know. I think they were hoping.
There was another former Kansas.
I know Kevin Young.
Kevin Young. There was one more, though.
The only reason I remember Kevin Young is because, after they started, I was at Power and Light. Like, this is weeks later with a few buddies, and he was walking around, and he came over to our table because one of my friends, he started hitting on one of my friends, and he told her, he's like, I play professional basketball in town. And I was like, what is happening right now?
Does that work? It didn't. Wait, is there a professional basketball team?
It didn't because everyone at our table was like, no, they don't. There's no team in town.
But he did play professional basketball.
I mean, he was right. I mean, but at the time we were like, what a line. If you're going to lie better. Be a chief.
He probably missed the days. It was probably easier at the, in Lawrence saying I play for the Jayhawks.
You can be Chris Tien right now in Lawrence, and it's easy money. Everyone knows who you are.
Just, if you're just on the team, you're set. You're good to go, no matter whether the team's ranked or not. No doubt about that. They might be ranked.
Next week, if they win the rest of the week, they might have a chance to sneak back in the
three
top
of their 25. Three of the next four are very winnable.
Their next three are all.
If they lose any of those games, they have a legitimate argument to be on the 10 line. If they lose to Iowa State or K-State, those teams are horrible.
They are, but they wouldn't fall to the 10 line, but I gotcha.
They should, is what I'm saying.
I mean, we saw the start of a four-game win streak last night. That was pretty exciting because there is just no way they lose to those teams. None. And then I think they have Tech or Texas on the back half of
Tech.
That. And that's probably where it ends.
Baylor, and Texas on the back half, the final three or four games.
I'll tell you this much. The one thing I would say about that Baylor game for Kansas is that if they actually won that game, I would take them as a legitimate Sweet 16 team. I don't think they have any chance to do that right now. But if they could actually beat Baylor, I would take that team very differently. Because Baylor is seemingly so much better than anybody else other than Gonzaga. Like, the separation between those two teams and the rest of college basketball seems to be significant.
The question would be, can McCormick play? I mean, he was great in the second half last night. Can he do it against legit competition? Can he do that when the competition ticks up? And, I would say the answer is probably no. But if he's able to play at that level, that changes where this team potentially could go. But we can talk more about that at a later time as we get a little bit closer to March Madness, which I can't wait. Are you taking off March 19th as well? Seems like a good day to take off of work.
I mean, I have the comp day built in.
Easy money.
I might look at – I mean, I might wait for the brackets to shake out because KU's that Friday at 3. Oh, that's an easy off day.
That's what I'm saying. Well, there's no games on Thursday, so.
Oh, that's right. It's the new schedule.
The first four is on Thursday.
Yeah, that's right. It's the new schedule. I don't like the new schedule. I'm a curmudgeon. I like my things the way my things have always been.
No, we were talking. Serta, you said something about that.
That's not on Thursday, Friday.
Like, the Thursday, Friday was part of what made the NCAA basketball tournament so great.
It's the two best days of the tournament.
It's incredible. Now I only have to take off one day. See, it's perfect.
What if the cats are in, though? Well, then we can just carry the cats. Then we can just carry the cats.
Are they on a 10-game winning streak? Did I hear it wrong? Is it the other way?
They're going to win the Big 12 tournament.
Big 12 tournament. Brisket ball, baby.
Yeah, they're going to run in the Big 12 tournament. They're going to sneak
if we
did, in.
If we have a Big 12 tournament, I know some conferences have already been like, eh.
If we did the toss up of better chance to make the NCAA tournament, K-State or UMKC, who would you take?
UMKC.
I would take the Cats because I don't know UMKC's conference will do a tournament. Because isn't UMKC, they're in the Summit again, right? Mm-hmm. They've been moving so often. They smell like one of those conferences that'll be like, you know what? It's not worth going to a neutral gym, paying to beat a neutral gym, having none fans come to said neutral gym, and thus we're going to punt the conference tournament.
Don't they? I mean, they could just do it at the homes. I don't think – you can correct me if I'm wrong, Cody, you follow Ruse more than I do, and I don't know how the Summit League is, but don't they play just whoever the top seed anyway now, or do they actually have a true neutral site?
They go to South Dakota, right?
So they've done that.
They used to go to the arena attached to South Dakota State's arena. So that was commonly where they had done it.
And it wasn't neutral, but it was like where everyone went.
How they did it commonly.
Anyway, so I can't wait for tournament time and all that. But as far as now, a few days two days removed from the Super Bowl, where are you at just about this team going forward? Because I still feel great about the franchise. They're still in a better position than everybody else in the National Football League going forward.
I agree. I don't know I agree with 16-0 claims I've heard, but I do think they're in a great spot going forward. But I know the 2021, odds when the Super Bowl have come out, I don't put much stock in those. We haven't had free agency. We haven't had a draft. We don't really know what the cap number is going to be. So there's a lot of influx. I know Chiefs fans are not true believers in the cap, but it is going to be worth noting if it goes down to 185 or 175 this year, because then you got to start looking at some cap casualties. And the easy names that pop up are the positions where the Chiefs really can't be afford to lose bodies. Because you figure LDT is a potential cap cut. We just saw the O-line's not great. Fisher, we saw his value on the team. And then Hitchens, and which I heard Chiefs fans for 16 games be like, they're great, but the linebackers suck. So if you lose your best one, and then you're already going to lose Wilson to free agency. So we're starting to enter a timeline with the Chiefs where the value in hitting in the draft is going to start to tick up, because now Mahomes' contract kicks in. And I'm not saying Brett Veach can't hit in the draft, because he's had a lot of hits, like Tershawn Wharton.
Yeah, but the first couple of years
But the
stunk.
First couple of years were bad, and he traded up to get Breland Speaks, which has been bad. Mecole Hardman has never lived up to that drafting. I don't want to, rehash the should you trade a first-round pick for Frank Clark, but I don't know.
I'm fine with that.
I don't know it's looking like great, but it's not looking bad.
He's shown up in the playoffs. Yeah. I'm fine with it.
And that first draft, the entire class, I don't believe anyone's on the roster from that first draft, right?
No, the first draft, which typically for GMs isn't good.
It's always
wasn't good. I think the thing I like, or the thing I feel good about Brett Veach, is that he's gotten better. But this like misnomer that he's just like can't miss draft guru is not accurate.
It's not true.
It's not a true statement.
And his misses have come early in the draft, which is really concerning. It's also good because he's hitting in the sixth and seventh round. I know Tershawn Wharton wasn't a draft pick, but to get him and get value out of him is great. However, you got to start hitting with first, second, and third round
picks. And
using
a sixth round pick and then eventually turning him into Charvarius.
Correct.
I just think like it's weird because like John Dorsey was he found top end talent guy.
Mm-hmm.
Veach's claim so far, in my opinion, the GM, is that he finds value everywhere.
Correct.
He does a really good job in finding the cheap, cheap players to be starters for this team. He has not done well at the top, top end of the draft to this stage. His first draft is a complete wash.
Yeah.
Speech, Nnadi, O'Daniel, Watts.
Nnadi's good.
Tremont Smith, McKenzie. Nnadi is a perfectly fine one-dimensional player.
Nnadi is what Nnadi is. PFF loved Nnadi this year. He's a fine pick for what he is. But, I mean, a year later, he took Colin Saunders in the exact same spot, and Colin Saunders is worse than Derek Nnadi.
Couldn't
so
get on the
a
field.
Miss. I mean,
yeah, but Fitton gets on the again six round pick. Fitton gets on the field. Hooray, six round pick. Nick Allegretti gets on the field. Hooray. Thornhill has a chance.
Injury set him back. We'll see.
Hardman.
The Chiefs are in the same position the Patriots were for all those years. It is so vital for you to hit on your draft picks, and the emphasis, I'm with you, is going to be greater going forward. But even for this next year, though, and I get the cap stuff, and Cody and I differ on this. Overall, I saw last year what happened with the cap situation, and they were still able to create some magic.
But the cap's going
I understand that. It's going down to, we think, 185, not 175.
Correct.
There's a huge issue if it goes to 175. I just don't know if there's any name that's actually going to surprise me. Give me a name that I don't think you could throw out a name that's actually would be a surprise. The Anthony Hitchens thing's Anthony Hitchens deal, week one of the season, everybody expected Anthony Hitchens to be gone after this year. Then he went out and had a really good season. He
so
actually
it
did.
So it'd be a surprise because of his quality, but name alone is not a surprise?
Eric Fisher, at this point, wouldn't be as big of a surprise because he's hurt. Now, I think we clearly saw the value of him. Are you just going to move on? I think there's going to be some restructures. I think Tyrann Mathieu gets a new contract, and therefore they're able to free up some space doing that as well. We don't know. Is Mitchell Schwartz going to retire? Is he gonna? I mean, what's gonna happen with Mitchell Schwartz? I don't think there's gonna be a name that's a surprise. Yeah, they could lose Sammy Watkins and Bashaud Breeland. I think they will, as a matter of fact. But they're not surprises.
Well, they can't cut Clark, so
of course not.
Like his cap, his cap number. It's like 20 something. They would lose money cutting Frank Clark. So like the name you're looking for in the surprise thing would have to come via trade of like Chris Jones,
right? And so I don't
think Chris Jones' cap number. I don't want to trade Chris Jones. I don't want to cut Chris Jones. I want that on the record.
Yeah, have to say that when you mention it.
Correct.
Sure.
I'm a big Chris Jones fan. I actually think he's the best defensive lineman they have, and I think it's close.
He's their best defensive player.
I would agree with that. But it is worth noting when he re-signed, the way his contract was structured, they can trade or cut him with very little penalty this offseason. The penalty goes up a little bit in 22-23. I don't want them to do that under any circumstances. Hear me loud and clear. Do not want 0 of 10. No, thank you. But the way it's structured, they can save some money with Chris Jones.
I do think we've overplayed the like I feel like I've heard multiple people, even on this station, mention the they got a lot of things to address. I'm like, okay, let's dial it back a little bit. They were like one bad game. They had one bad game in 2 years and were like, boy, look at all of the errors they've been having to fix for years. Like, no. They played their worst at the worst possible time.
Well, they knew about the O-line already.
Yeah, but that was a progressive issue. That wasn't they put nothing into it. But I think we talk about linebacker and corner and wide receiver. Like, those are things they're going to have to address. But they are not the massive issues we make them out to be. They are, if you can find one player, in my opinion, to address those needs, you're good.
I guess.
Like, if you find one corner to replace Breeland or Ward, you're fine. A couple with the draft and Fenton, you're okay. Like, you're not that bad at linebacker. If you find one wide receiver, you're okay. Like, I don't think it's as dire as it's made out to be for a team that went 16-2 over the last year with their starters.
I agree. I don't think it's as dire as some people say, but I think it's if there's a spectrum and people are like, yeah, they're fine, they went to the Super Bowl, everyone's back, let's go. And 10 is it's dire. I kind of fall on a 6 because they are losing a lot of starters. And again, the cap number is the mystery, so we'll see. But just what we know are UFAs. Sammy Watkins is a starter. We know his value to this team. Austin Ryder is a starter. He was really good after coming back from being benched for Daniel Kilgore.
Damian Wilson,
Bashaud Breeland, Charvarius Ward. We mentioned Hitchens could be a cap cut. That's 5 unrestricted free agents that are starters on this team.
That's normal.
That's very normal.
Last year, 21 of 22 is not normal.
Last year was an anomaly, but then you look at who's next in line of those positions. They don't have a ready-made we can afford to lose him because player X. Behind Austin Ryder is Daniel Kilgore, who's also technically a UFA. Not that you would bring back Kilgore, but so you don't really have a center going into next season. We saw without a number 2 receiver in this team and no Sammy Watkins, they had some struggles in the Super Bowl specifically, but they had some struggles with the offense. Sure. They need a number 2 receiver.
But they were pretty much the offense they were all year without Sammy Watkins because he didn't play. So at worst, they're still a 30-point per game offense.
That's fine. But then you're losing 2 corners. 2 corners is a big deal. I know.
That's a big deal.
I know everyone's like, I see it on the text line every day. Why do you guys talk about corner? No one cares about corner. Brett Veach has proven corner doesn't matter. Well, they're going to be starting Rashad right now if the season started, which would be a crazy story. But if it did start right now, it would be Rashad Fenton and
Snead,
which is passable. But Snead wasn't good in the Super Bowl. He had a little rookie moment. That's life. So you need to add players there. I know Bo Peak Keys is on the roster, but does anyone think Bo Peak Keys are ready made?
He's just an unknown.
He's an unknown commodity. So
I'd be surprised if he, based on the way they used him this year, if he's ready to make that jump.
You need a corner. I'm pretty sure Daniel Sorensen's also UFA. That's one.
Yes. No, he has 1 year left.
Is 1 year left?
You sure? I thought he's a free agent.
He has
a year
left on his deal. I think you thought that, and we looked it up. And
maybe he's an RFA or there's something. There's some hinkiness there. DeMarcus Robinson, we know, is also gone. A guy that this offense loves for reasons I can't fully concept. Yeah,
he's
Daniel Sorensen.
He's available for, but
his contract is
be available
up.
For so 1 year.
He is a
Sorensen's,
UFA.
Sorry. You can get Sorensen back, but these are, you're starting to now spend money. Daniel Sorensen will probably have not a huge market, but there'll be a market. You have to now pay him probably a little more than he's worth or let him walk
or
and
don't,
find someone.
Because you have two safeties in Matthew and Thornhill.
Correct, but they run a lot of three safety. You know how that is.
Yeah, but they did that when they were short on corner. Like, I know what you're talking about. This is where I actually like Spags. They were really
correct.
They are very,
a lot of flexibility with all those positions. Yeah. Spags doesn't play true positional football.
And you know
on
what
the
I think
end.
Is available? Dan Sorensen quality safeties on the free agency market for cheap.
Kurt Coleman came to this team and Bob Sutton made him a great player. So I'm not saying Sorensen.
I can't be sure they'll be as clutch as Sorensen.
Correct.
Because I can't be promised that.
And I don't want people to be like, wow, Rob thinks losing Sorensen will really hurt this team. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying suddenly you're looking at a slew of bodies that are going to be leaving that have played value positionless football for this team. And you either have to A, pay them what their new market value is, or B, try to find their replacement on the market. And we know how free agency works. You'd kind of have to overpay because that's just, you get caught in bidding wars. It's life. So then you kind of be like, okay, we have to pay extra for a position X with the draft, this position.
Sure. It makes the draft just valuable.
And now it all kind of plays together. They're keeping the core, which is what's extremely important. But those ancillary players are also important. We heard about it with Scott Beasley forever. It's not the perfect 53, it's the right 53. There is some truth in that. You got to have a good depth of positions because we see guys get hurt. So that's where the offseason will be very interesting to me. How can they replace those guys?
And hopefully we'll get some word officially on what that cap number is going to be, and it'll give everybody a much better idea of actually what is feasible or not. Rob Brendan, of course, you'll hear him this afternoon coming up on The Drive. Thanks, man.
No problem, guys.
He joined us in studio, of course, on the forum. Coming up in 90 seconds, Serta's got his fantasy flash taking a look at Donovan Mitchell. Yes, the flash focuses over to the NBA. Plus, our Chiefs Red Half Hour, Jeffrey Flanagan, is the author of Marty Ball. We'll continue to talk about the life and legacy of Marty Schottenheimer.
Cody and Gold, presented by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip funding guys at kzlend.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Chiefs Red Half Hour, every day at 11:30 on Cody and Gold.
Our Chiefs Red Half Hour is presented by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views. You can enjoy Twin Peaks without ever having to leave your couch. Just order up your favorites today on DoorDash, Postmates, or Uber Eats. Of course, you can also just head to twinpeaksrestaurant.com/order-online. We continue today to honor the life and legacy of Marty Schottenheimer, who passed away yesterday at the age of 77, leading four teams to 200 regular season victories over the more than two decades that he was the coach, and of course spent 10 years as the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs. We had Nick Lowry, the Chiefs Hall of Famer, on speaking what he meant to his life, to his career, and someone that might know about Marty Schottenheimer's life and career better than anyone, frankly. It was someone who co-wrote Marty Ball, and he is Jeffrey Flanagan. He joins us here on the Comfort Systems Heating and Cooling Hotline. Jeffrey, thanks so much for coming on the show. What has this been like the last week or so when, unfortunately, the news came that Marty Schottenheimer had been moved to a hospice facility and, of course, yesterday passing away at age 77?
Yeah, it's been pretty rough. I mean, it's been hard on Pat and Brian and Kristen over the last few years. And I started exchanging some text messages with Pat little over a week ago when they were moving him from the hospital to hospice. And obviously, you know what that scenario is going to end like. And, you know, his health had just been deteriorating over the years. Started to see some signs of it, actually, when we were doing the book together, all, you know, 10 years ago with Alzheimer's, and then was finally diagnosed with that, and I think it was at 14. And it's just been a rough time for that family, and I just have so much respect for how brave and courageous Pat has been through the years taking care of Marty. And it's just a sad, sad day for everyone in Kansas City.
Flanny, I know you weren't covering the Chiefs at the time Andy Reid came over, but you were certainly obviously in town. I always kind of looked at that time, and I was too young to remember the transition, but just seeing where they were and where they ended up, I always kind of looked at the transition from where they were to Marty Schottenheimer being a similar, you know, as big of a move franchise-wise as when the Chiefs moved on to Reid. Is that how you saw that transition from 88 to 89 and what the Chiefs were then and what they became under Marty?
Yeah, I think it was even, Cody, I think it was even huger back then because, I mean, Arrowhead was a ghost town back in the 80s. I first got here in 89, and it still, even at that time, that was Marty's first year, there really wasn't, it was still a Royals town, completely Royals town. I mean, nobody went to Chiefs games. I mean, there were 25,000 out there. They were never on national TV. They were just an awful team, and for what him and Carl were able to resurrect in this town was just amazing, because in the 90s, it was just such an event. Everything they did, you know, Red Fridays and the games themselves, the Monday Night Footballs, and the tailgating, and it was just unbelievable, the transition and transformation they made. I think it was bigger. And I'm not slighting anything that Andy's done, because there were some lean years after Marty left too, but it just for him to build this thing, and then they had obviously a little slip up, like I mentioned, in the 2000s. But for Andy to get it back there, it's an event again.
When you look at back, you know, and obviously 1,000% agree on that. And when you look back at you know what Marty was able to accomplish, I know you know we talk about you know how hard it is to finish those things off with a championship, but from a legacy perspective, when you look at what he did across four teams, when you talked with Marty about the book, just how proud was he that he was able to do it in so many different locations, Flanny? Like, that's not something very many coaches can say. Everywhere he went, including Cleveland, where nobody wins, you know, Marty won.
And even in Washington, you know, he took an awful team there and got them to 8-8, and they were pretty poised to do the same thing he had done in Kansas City and Cleveland. And then, of course, you had the wacko owner got rid of him. But, you know, yeah, to do that in four places is just amazing to me. And the fact that he's not in the Hall of Fame, to me, is just shameful. We put so much emphasis on getting to a Super Bowl, winning Super Bowls, stuff like that. Does that make any less what Marv Levy and Jim Kelly did in Buffalo? Or just any other place, you know, whether it's college football or basketball? We put way too much emphasis on that. What he did was he built programs everywhere he went. I mean, Cleveland fans still adore him. San Diego fans, I mean, what he did with the Chargers was remarkable in such a short period of time. And then, of course, what he did here over 10 years. He's just, to me, one of the greatest all-time coaches ever, and he should be recognized for that.
We, throughout the day, have had different Chiefs players on the show and on this station. When you were writing that book, was there a moment or a story from a particular player? What stood out to you just about what you had heard from what Marty meant to some of these guys?
Well, I mean, he meant so much to Derek Thomas, too. And I know you guys are young, but you probably remember the legacy of Derek Thomas and how he had to bench him one time in Denver for a huge Monday night game. And I just remember him talking about how he had been late for a couple practices or something, like, so he had to discipline him. He kept him out of the lineup for like a quarter and a half, and he just kept telling me he was like a caged animal running the sidelines, just couldn't wait to get in the game, and you know, things like that. And there's just so many stories. You know, I tweeted out a couple of them just a little while ago, but you know, the one play at a time, the cliche that we've heard all our lives. I was just stunned, and I verified the best I could that he's actually the one who coined that phrase in the 60s when he missed a tackle on Joe Namath and kept wondering about why he missed that tackle and screwed up the rest of his game. And so he just like said, all right, you have to play the game one play at a time. And suddenly that thing took off over the last five decades. And Pat, you know, the midnight rule, I think, is something I've actually applied to losing. And the midnight rule, of course, is that you can whine and bitch about it, complain about it, but at midnight that night it has to stop. And then the next day you get up and you move on. And Marty's wife, Pat, came up with that rule in the 90s while they were here. And I think it's a good lesson for all fans, too. But, yes, yeah, just so many great stories and just how he was able to cope with all those heartbreaking losses. I don't think there's a coach on the planet who's ever had to experience so many wacko losses. I mean, just you go through the drive, the fumble in Cleveland, and, you know, Lynn Elliott missing three chip shots, and the one in San Diego where they had the game won against Tom Brady. They had the interception, and all he has to do is fall down. Instead, he tries to run it out, and he fumbles it back. I mean, just crazy stuff like that. Just how this guy never got to the Super Bowl is just amazing to me, but he never got him down. I mean, like he told me, he said, it's not always about you. And so every one of those circumstances, you know, we're going to remember Elway for the drive. We're going to remember Tom Brady. That was one of his first great comebacks when he beat San Diego. And Jim Harbaugh beating the Chiefs at Arrowhead. There's a flip side to everything. And I think that's what Marty taught me when I was writing that book.
When you go back, and I know this is something we talk a lot about with coaches and their legacy as far as their coaching tree, certainly very few people have one as impressive as his. Dungy and Cowher and Arians, who obviously just won the Super Bowl on Sunday. Is that something he took a lot of pride in? I always wonder that with coaches, Flanny. Like, we talk a lot about the guys who come off of their tree. How much did that mean to Marty that so many guys went on to have success who coached with him?
I think he did. He didn't ever bring that up to me when I was writing the book. I mean, but he certainly was proud of all the guys, you know, Mike McCarthy, you mentioned Cowher. There were so many that came from his tree. And it's not so much the X's and O's, it's just how he handled people and how he coached professionally. And I think that was part of his legacy, too. And that's what, I mean, if you ask Bill Cowher, I don't know if you guys might have him on the show, too, but he'll tell you that, too, is that it's just how you treat people and how you get them to play at their, you know, ultimate level. And he was able to do that in every place he went, and that's rare. As you guys know, that's really rare.
Jeffrey Flanagan, author of Marty Ball, The Life and Triumphs of Marty Schottenheimer, the coach who really did win it all. Terrific insight, perspective. Thanks so much for the time.
Hey, thanks, guys. Take care.
That's Flanny over on the Comfort Systems Heating and Cooling Hotline.
I do, you know, like, I mean, if you go back and look, like I talked about that Andy Reid transition, the Chiefs maybe were coming off of the worst year of their franchise's history, on and off the field. Andy Reid came in and things were immediately fixed. We're too young, yeah. But if you study the history of Chiefs, like, we're too young to actually remember it. But I've gone back and I've read what people said about it. Like, if you go back and look at the transition from 88 to 89, night and day, destitute. Like, they were not an interesting franchise. People didn't go to Arrowhead. It wasn't the kind of positivity people had around the organization. He changed that.
It's wild to think, as you said, just given how old we are, but it's wild to think that 20,000 people were going
That's
to Arrowhead.
Weird, yeah.
20,000. And then Carl Peterson hires Marty Schottenheimer, and really the rest is history. It changed the vibe in the whole city. My parents do talk about that quite a bit. They were season ticket holders in the 90s, and it was just a completely, when it was easy to get season tickets, you know. And then for a while, it was nearly impossible to get season tickets, you know, because of what they were able to do and build, and certainly what Marty Schottenheimer was able to build. As we continue to talk about his life and legacy for Marty Schottenheimer, passing away at the age of 77. Christian Okoye going to join us coming up at 1 o'clock today here on Cody and Gold, as we do continue in the Chiefs Red half hour a little bit in transition to more on Andy Reid, as you asked the question there to Jeffrey Flanagan about how certainly the impact that Andy Reid has had on this franchise, but also, you know, Andy Reid at this point in time, if you are him and you're getting set for the offseason, certainly you're disappointed with how the season ultimately ended with the loss on Sunday, but difficult decisions perhaps ahead as well, when you think about what we were talking about with Rob a short while ago in the cap decisions that have to be made. I mean, this is a, a situation where you've got the core group together, but there's still some tough decisions on the horizon.
They're going to. I know that we've, again, maybe big name is not the right way to look at this goal, but they are in a position now where there are going to be some difficult decisions, and you got to figure out who you can replace the easiest. This is how I want them to approach the offseason come from a general sense, which is Andy knows the roster is going to turn over, and he knows the roster is going to turn over more than it has in a couple of years in Kansas City, because as much as we talk about there wasn't much turnover from the Super Bowl win to this year and the Super Bowl loss, there wasn't a ton of turnover from the 2 years before that, but some big turnover. There was no Houston, no Barry, and instead Matthew and Clark.
And Spags.
And Spags. But that's, you know, that's a coaching staff. They're not going to have it. No, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But that's not going to change again this year.
Yeah, the only coach that's leaving.
Other than Dylan McCullough, who's heading off to Indiana.
Right. And for an opportunity, he wants to become a college, according to Ian Rappaport, wants to become a college head football coach. And he thinks being an associate head coach at Indiana and running backs coach there is going to give him that opportunity. So
he's also well-respected as the USC running back coach and all of those things. Yeah. Dylan will be missed here in Kansas City, but a replaceable coach at that level. The kind of coaches you lose, right? I do, actually. And his story is incredible. If you've never watched it's not a 30 for 30, but the documentary on his growing up and his finding
came
his father
year,
late
yeah,
in
a
life.
Year or so
it's incredible, incredible. But, yeah, I just think that, like, when we start looking at those things, I think Andy Reid knows that. This is what he had to say yesterday in that end-of-the-year press conference about making sure you don't let one game, though. That's the problem. I think you could look at this game and you'd be like, they can't stop, you know, like their linebackers can't play. They can't get any pass rush. They don't have good enough pass catchers. There's a mistake in thinking that one game is how you determine a roster.
Yeah, so that's what's important here about stepping back for an inch. You can kind of reflect and think and scheme eval and do those things. And we'll get right on our personnel evals here with the coaches this week and make sure we knock that out and then give that to Brett. It'll be important that when we do that as coaches and give our reports to Brett that we do just what you're saying, Sam, that we look at the whole picture and not necessarily make it off of one game.
And I think that's the thing that everyone needs to be very careful with when they're starting to decide how to evaluate this roster going forward. One game did not determine what they did over the course of a season. If you're able to go 16-2, and that's what they went, including the Super Bowl loss, with your starters this year, I'd say you'd be careful before you're like, let's make wholesale changes. Get better in certain areas, sure, or at least try to stay equally as good while putting an emphasis on which players help you win big games, sure. And the defensive players did that. They need more of a pass rush as a result
sure.
of that.
But
it's easy to get caught up in the one game screwed us over part.
No doubt. And that's something that I think for coaches, though, is easy, much easier for them to set back. It's tough than us. Like, as fans, it's tough to not just continue to focus and focus in on what happened on Sunday night. Coaches, it doesn't mean it didn't sting. It doesn't it hurt, absolutely. But they're able to. They've been this thing long enough. Certainly Andy Reid has had, you know, losses in postseason and Super Bowls before to understand, right?
It's the second loss in a Super Bowl, yep.
Yeah, to understand what it's, you know, what the real scenario is at stake going forward. And they are still, I really believe it, and I don't, you know, they are in a position that every other team still would love to be in terms of the future of where their roster is at. And yes, that includes the Bucs, who will have a nice roster returning next year as well. But still, long term, the Chiefs are still in a much better spot than most teams in the National Football League, if not all of them, because of 15, because of the core guys. You still have Travis Kelce. You're going to have Tyrann Mathieu. You're going to have Chris Jones, we think, and every, you know, and Frank Clark, these guys under contract. They can make their decision on what they want to do with those contracts, but they're under contract. They're in a really, really good spot. But I do think going back to how people were viewing week one, even as far as certain guys, there was a couple guys week one of the season that everybody already would have agreed. And I remember we even had conversations about it that, oh, this is probably the last year this guy is on the team. And then the season goes on and you see how they performed. And you're like, are we sure? And that guy, by the way, again, is Anthony Hitchens, because he seemed like an automatic guy that most people thought would not be back next season. Who knows what his future holds? He's under contract. There's an opportunity to save some money there, but he actually had his best season as a member of the Chiefs this past year. And so, yeah, I understand they drafted Willie Gay, but
do you get out a year early rather than a year late is normally the adage.
Right, right. So that's a guy to keep an eye on still, but it's a little bit different. It seemed like almost an automatic deal before. Sammy Watkins seemed like an automatic a year ago. It seems like an automatic now as well, but I'll caution people. Most people this time a year ago thought that Sammy Watkins was for sure not going to return, and he did. Now, the difference is Sammy Watkins was available in the postseason last year. He was available in the Super Bowl, but really wasn't on the field a whole lot.
One target?
one target, and I had the snaps yesterday. We were looking at. I don't remember what the snaps.
It's hard
were,
to target anyone because he got pressured on 40.
The whole offense was a mess last or Sunday night.
Of course it was. Yeah. And I'm not just saying it was just the offensive line. Like Patrick Mahomes tried to take some of the heat on that. I know that there's blame to go around. I know it's and you know game plan is part of it. But yeah, I mean the guys they needed to show up didn't show up. But those guys have for the most part done it. Like I know it'd be like it's easy to be like they did not get nearly enough pass rush because they didn't. From Chris Jones and Frank Clark. But they showed up in the previous two games and the three games in the postseason last year. So out of five of the six playoff games, those guys have shown up in the postseason. This time they didn't. Am I more likely to assume the five out of six times is true or the one time? You know, and that's
yeah, I mean, I still have no problem with what Frank Clark has done for the Chiefs since he's been here. I really don't. Yeah, would we like to see more of a regular season production closer to playoff? Yeah, but we've talked about his playoff success that he's had as a player. Last year and yes, this year, and even in you know the whole defense, it wasn't there after the first two drives. But don't kid yourself, the first drive or two on defense that you saw from Frank Clark, tell me you weren't very excited thinking, oh boy, this playoff Frank. That's what everybody was thinking. Now, the rest of the game, nobody was anything, nobody was in Super Bowl mode on the defense.
Chris Jones, I thought again, played well.
He had a really good, I thought Chris Jones had a really good season.
Yeah.
Really good. I have no problem with what they're getting out of Frank Clark. I really don't. Again, I would like to see more in the regular season, but if he's proven that he does turn it on in the big games, he has. That has been represented in his career so far with Kansas City. But they have decisions to make. They absolutely have decisions to make, and last year was not normal. It was stunning. They returned 21 of 22. So this year, if they return 15 of 22, that's more of the norm. Okay?
It's very normal.
Like that's what's supposed to happen.
It's really like now their question is, what positions are they the deepest at that you're the least concerned about losing players? Like now, like if I asked you today and said offensive line, you'd be like, what the hell, man? Why would you say that? I'd be like, well, I mean, they were able to run their entire second unit offensive line all the way to the Super Bowl. So like depth wasn't bad. And if they added more depth, maybe they'd be fine. Maybe they could afford to lose a couple of starters on that offensive line because it's not like they were doing the job in the Super Bowl anyway, right? Like, I get it, but, you know, you're, like, afraid to lose almost anyone at that position. We think that there's a chance they could lose a couple wide receivers. I'm not worried about that. You know why? Because Sammy Watkins pretty much didn't play this year. Like, he was a 400-yard receiver. I can find a lot of 400-yard receivers. And he was a 400-yard receiver in seven games, which makes him more valuable than Chris Conley getting 550 yards over 16. But it's would I rather have Chris Conley over 16 for the 550 or Sammy Watkins for seven games, half of a Super Bowl. Like, and those are the decisions.
And that contract, thank goodness for Sammy, the way they structured it was actually very smart what they did with Sammy's deal, which is why overall, yeah, you still don't feel like you got your $7 million worth. But at the same time, the only way it became a huge issue is if he would have hit all these incentives, which he obviously didn't play enough to get to that. So it didn't end up being a $12.5 or $13, $14 million contract. He kind of made, I would have to go back and look at every single incentive. I'm going to guess he didn't hit any of them.
No. And I want them to add another receiver. We can get to that in a minute. But there's a lot to the decisions. I would just be careful about cutting in the wrong places. The places I do not want to see cuts are pass rusher or defensive line, because I already feel like I actually think they need addition there, not subtraction. So I don't want to see misses there, right?
Yeah. I mean, I know going further down the depth chart, like Tano's up. I don't know what Tano's future. Probably not. I mean, there's a decent chance Tano's not.
Yeah, but I'd be interested in Tano back and Okafor back and like the guys that I'm, because I don't think they need subtraction there. I think they need addition. Like, to me, like, some of the subtractions, like, I'm not as worried about linebacker. I understand that there's going to be at least probably one of the two corners gone. Like, I respect a lot of the positions that they're going to have to make some transition in. And like I said, wide receiver can be a position where you just do it different than you did it the year before. But there's a couple of areas where, yeah, I'm not going to panic, but I would tell you, subtraction means more in those areas than it does in some others.
And then you just have a lot of, you know, some of the veteran signings from a year ago in the offseason that were on one-year contracts. Like Mike Remmers turned out to be a huge signing for them.
He did.
But there's a chance, there's a very good chance Mike Remmers, you know, may not be back this next season. There's a very good chance Kilgore's not back next season. There's Wisniewski probably not back, you know, next year. So there's some of those veteran guys that played their role. They absolutely lived up to what you were hoping you could get out of them. I mean, Mike Remmers, despite what happened on Sunday night, Mike Remmers was huge for this team during the season. Absolutely huge for them because what he was able to do when they had the injuries. And then, of course, Osemele was having a nice start to the season before his injury. There's a lot of questions, but it's not, you know, they're all you know, fixable issues, I truly believe, whether through some re-signings, restructurings. Obviously, the draft is going to be so vital for Brett Veach and company. They pick at 31. Do they, you know, is he going to try to stockpile some more picks by trading back? Is he going to trade up to make sure they can get an impact offensive lineman earlier? Are they willing to do that? look, we've got, what, 2 months to figure all that out.
Yeah, I guess. It's going to be it's a weirdly fascinating offseason. Because last year was like, we're just going to run this entire crew back and try to go win the Super Bowl again. Came up just short. And now it's like, how do we get back to the Super Bowl again so that we can avenge last year's loss? And look, teams, the Bills could get better. They could get worse. They could stay the same. We don't know yet. Everyone's offseason is still very much open right now. We don't know which, like, we think Godwin's going to go back to the Bucs, but what if he didn't?
Always
surprises.
Someone
offered him a ridiculous paycheck, right, that he just took somewhere else.
There's always surprises, and there's stunners with the quarterback carousel could have a huge role in terms of what these teams are able to do going forward as well. All of a sudden, if a team, you know, goes out and acquires Deshaun Watson and it's not the Jets, it's a team that might have a chance to be, you know, a competitor right away. Let's just say that scenario would play out. That changes maybe how you view and how, therefore, what free agent decides to go to that team because they want to play with Deshaun Watson. And what's the trickle-down effect it means for the Chiefs' chances at getting X players? So it's very, very early on in the process, but it is an interesting offseason. There's no doubt, and I think we all know they're not going to be able to return the 21 of 22 starters yet again, as ridiculous as that was a year ago. Coming up next, we head into the noon hour. We'll get to what's trending and also something that's being thrown out there about Mahomes after his performance on Sunday night. Are people looking at this too harshly?
Cody and Gold, presented by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip funding guys at kclend.com.